From the trails, woods, and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network, it's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Did spring just happen? I'm curious because, it was like our fourth winter for the longest time. And all of a sudden, bam, we got 80-some degrees. We'll get back into a regular 70s and 60s coming up. But that means there's a lot of things going on in the outdoors. We have, of course, turkey season going on. The steelhead are running. The walleye are doing well. We're going to talk morel mushroom hunting with David A. Rose in a little bit. But first, we got to thank our friends at Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Monthly auctions are back. Again, they used to be weekly. Now they're monthly, a little bit more controlled. I wouldn't say controlled because they're so busy with the last ones, but still getting lots of stuff out there. And anywhere in America that you can hear this show via podcast or locally in Michigan via our many affiliates on the Michigan Talk Network, you can have your auction items shipped to, okay? They do all the paperwork. They handle everything else. So make sure that you check out their auctions, notjustguns.com, and let them know that we sent you. Also, if you're buying online, maybe Conquest Scents, you need Evercalm to cover your scent as you're getting out in the woods, maybe putting up some trail cameras to see what new additions to the deer herd are coming, or just finding out who made it from last year. ConquestScents.com, link on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Again, purchase it anywhere in the world via our website through theirs at wildmichiganradio.com. So that being said, we're going to talk to Doug Roberts, the deer professor from Conquest Scents here. Also, he is the vice president now. He's taken a step down and a drastic cut in pay with the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. And Doug, I say that like completely tongue-in-cheek.
It's totally a voluntary position, so, but 31 years of doing it, so it's been a long run and enjoyable, and Ryan, the new president, will do a good job. He's doing a great job, so he's a new up-and-comer deer farmer and starting to take the rain, so that's kind of nice.
It is, you know what, because we need for everything we do in the outdoors, we need young people to be interested. We need people of all ages to educate everybody as to what goes on, the proper methods of doing things, and our right way, the best way we know how.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, it's not just the deer farming industry. It's the hunting industry. You know, I never thought, you know, and we've talked about this, I never thought I would get to the age where I'm coming to the backside of things. I'm not on the front side of things. And so now it's my job, and we as hunters, it's our job to teach the younger generations what we know, give them the advice, learn from the past as they move forward, because at some point, you know, we're not going to be around, and they need to know how to do things and what to do. So that's really where we're lacking right now, I think, in this country and with the younger generations. So
you know, and
it's fun.
It is, you know, it's doing what I do. You know, I mean, I there's no real visible impact that I can see with what I do, with what you do, with raising these trophy, just beautiful, typical whitetails, and the other ones that the other guys do, you know, in their area of expertise, there is a visible impact on your work. With my work, I don't really see it because it's radio until somebody comes up and says, hey, you know, when I worked for the classic rock station, I would always close out with get out in the Michigan woods and water, go hunting, fishing, take the kids with you, educate them, please. They're the future of our outdoor sports. Now, for somebody to say that on a rock and roll station, it really kind of blows a lot of people's minds. But
yep.
To this day, people still come up and say, you know what, that kind of hit me or whatever. And that's my impact. Yep. And, you know, one person goes a long way with me.
you know, Duran, we all make an impact. It's either going to be positive, neutral, or negative. You may not know about it, but as long as we stay positive, we continue to educate, we continue to give the knowledge out there, whether we see the results or not, things are going to happen. And we have to understand it's not about us feeling good or hearing that we're doing a big deal. It's just knowing that as things move on, it will have positive impacts on other people and hopefully get people out into the woods and to understand it's really taking the people that are negative to it and moving them to neutral and taking the people that are neutral with something and moving them to the positive side. That's the goal of everything. And that's what we do in the deer farming industry. That's really what our advertising is about, is to get the people to understand who we are, what we do, the good that we do. At the end of the day, our industry is all about consumption. It's another source of protein, as Uncle Ted would say.
Sure.
That's what it's about. But it's raising them in a good environment, giving them the potential for a great life, and yet giving hunters the wonderful experience of getting in the outdoors and seeing the amazing animals that we now know how to grow. So that's what it's all about.
Doug Roberts is our guest from Conquest Sense, also the Vice President of United Deer Farmers of Michigan. Doug, let me play devil's advocate for a minute, okay? Because this is a difficult thing for me to do because I know the answers to this to a degree. I'm not going to know the answer to this question. When I'm asked by somebody that doesn't hunt or is anti-hunting, you know, why do you do it? Why do you feel the need to go hunting? Well, there's the relaxation, there's the food, the population control, there's so much work that goes into it that by the time you either have shown a light on it a little bit, or they're just never going to be convinced. So what I'm asking in your industry with the United Deer Farmers of Michigan, with facilities like this all over the country, why do we need the, you know, let's say trophy, typical class, or even more questionable in some people's eyes and minds, why do we need these freakish, non-typical, you know, shrubbery-looking whitetails running around, you know.
Right.
So I guess that'll be the question, because there are people that don't hunt or fish that might have those questions.
Well, exactly. The one thing that makes whitetail deer unique to everybody is that every single one of them is different. There's no two alike. There's no two identical bucks alike. And so it's the one animal, it's the one species of animal that caters to every single person's liking. And the majority, yes, the majority of hunters like the more typical look. They say typical with extras. But there is a lot of people that just like craziness. And it's the one animal that is able to give everybody that dream buck look. You just have to find it. You know, you look at elk, and elk pretty much look like elk. You look at sheep pretty much have horns that all look the same. You look at longhorns, they all pretty much look the same. You go to the white-tailed deer, and that's not true. And so it's an animal that gives variety. It gives differences. And so it caters to every single person. And I've never met a person that has looked at me and said, I don't like deer.
Right.
I don't care if you're 1 year old or if you're 101 years old, everybody likes this animal. And so again, why do we raise them? Well, the original reason we started raising them was that the wild population was actually going extinct.
Okay.
And I'm speaking of Michigan right now.
Hold that.
The DNR actually is
one. Hold that thought real quick, Doug. We're going to come right back to you. Sorry, we came up against a break. We're going to continue this conversation with Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense right here on Wild Michigan on the Michigan Talk Network.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Hey, up in the backwoods, down in the holler. Old boy's feeling like a dog on a collar. Keeping that chain pulled tight. Waiting on Saturday night.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. And happy 60-year-old birthday to our good friend Chris Tyler, the voice of Wild Michigan. He has been for the past 15 years, and he was just a wee child when he started doing our voice work. But great guy, good radio friend of mine, and brother in the business, if you will. Happy birthday to him. Thanks again to Not Just Guns, Conquest Sense. Also, as we are speaking with Doug Roberts of Conquest Sense, excuse me, and the vice president of the United Deer Farmers of Michigan. And we kind of got on a topic, and I'm, like I said, Doug, being devil's advocate, reposing this question about why we need whitetail facilities, not only the ones that grow the beautiful typical, but the beautiful non-typical, I mean, just crazy antlered whitetail. You know, I mean, this is a genetic issue that you are creating these deer with. You are altering, I don't want to say altering, but there's, I would say, defining to a certain type of genetics for these deer.
Yeah, it's not altering the genetics. What it's doing is we are able to take the different genetic lines and we're able to breed them to each other to create more non-typical structure in them, or we can now create more typical structure. You know, it's interesting, as the deer industry, when I got into it, if you had 170-inch typical 10-point, you were at the top of the industry. We're now growing yearlings bigger than that. But then all of a sudden, the hunting community, believe it or not, that hunted at the ranches, started liking the non-typical points that started showing up, drop ties and splits and stuff like that. And so our industry got into this kick of trying to produce that for those hunters and then realized that, wow, they really liked the scores, the high scores. So we went from growing 200 inches to 300 inches to 400 inches to 500 inches. Believe it or not, I believe we've broke the 600 inch mark on a white-tailed deer. Now it's completely non-typical. It's funky looking. And it was a fad. And then all of a sudden the hunters started getting questioned by non-hunters and their buddies going, well, what range did you shoot that at? Because it wasn't reality in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
And so our industry had to all of a sudden realize, oh, my goodness, we need to pull back and give the deer respect and start growing more typical-looking whitetails. My theory in this industry has always been, I want to grow the deer that the general public can look at and go, yeah, I saw one like that in my backyard.
Mm-hmm.
Mine may score a lot more, be a lot bigger, but the look, and it also, I think, to me, the respect for the animal itself. Part of the look is, you know, keeping the respect for that animal is the look. But that's just my personal opinion. You know, why do we farm deer? Do we have to? No, we don't have to farm deer. I choose to because I love farming, I love hunting, I love the white-tailed deer, and I can legally farm them. And it's also, we produce a lot of venison for a lot of people. You know, we sell snack sticks, we sell, you know, steaks and cuts. We eat a lot ourselves, a lot of our friends. So it's a consumption process, and it's a very good lean meat. It's a very healthy meat. It's you know, for animals, it's actually there's no allergies to it. So all these pets that have allergies to human foods, venison's one of those you can feed them. There's no allergies to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very good food source, and you can't get enough of it out of the wild. So farming produces that volume.
Doug Roberts is our guest here with Conquest Sense. I'm Duran Martinez. Doug, you stated, unfortunately, at the break, that there was a serious... Now, we look around and go, what? There was a serious shortage of white-tailed deer in Michigan.
Yeah, actually, it was funny. When I was a kid, my dad actually showed me two newspaper clippings. And the one was, I lived over in Ottawa County. They literally, the front page of the Grand Rapids Press showed the last white-tailed deer that existed in that county. And it was killed. It was hunted out. And so the white-tailed deer did not exist. And so what happened in Michigan, the DNR literally caught some of the wild deer, took them to some of the dairy and beef farmers, says, can you start raising these and releasing the offspring to repopulate the state of Michigan? That's how we got our deer herd back. And the second article my dad showed me was a picture of the first footprint of the white-tailed deer back in Ottawa County after that process started. He kept those two front page clippings. It was amazing to me. So when we did our TV show, Conquest 200, we actually did an episode on how did deer farming start in the state of Michigan. And literally the DNR agency started deer farming in Michigan because they asked the farmers to repopulate, help them repopulate the white-tailed deer in Michigan. And then when they said, okay, thank you, we've got enough of them, a lot of the farmers went, oh, no, we really love doing this. We're going to keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, well, go ahead.
Oh.
So we'll start selling you permits. And there, when I got into it 31 years ago, there were not many regulations.
Right.
And as more and more people got into it, we had to start putting regulations in place and fence heights and all of that, because it has now become a legitimate agricultural industry. And our animals are looked at as livestock. Whether they're on a ranch or on a farm or whatever, they're considered livestock, just like a cow or a horse or a pig. So, yeah, we have to kind of thank the DNR agency for getting us going.
You know, it just amazes me, too, when we see so many. I mean, right now, especially, where we have, it's unbalanced, but a big, healthy population of deer in Michigan. It's just phenomenal, you know. And to find out how that happened and with management and everything else, it's amazing, man. I appreciate you sharing that story. Unfortunately, we didn't cover anything of what I wanted to talk about, but I'll say this is a hell of a lot more fun than what we were going to talk about, because we have time to talk about the other. Real quickly, though, like you say, be on the lookout for fawns, because they're going to start popping up here like dandelions.
It is. There's moms that are having babies right now. They're keeping them hidden. You're going to start finding newborns in very weird places. If they're curled up and it looks like they've been abandoned, leave them alone. They're doing well. They're doing good. It's a hard thing to do because they're so cute, but right. Mom will be somewhere paying attention.
Absolutely. You can't see them, but they can see you, and just leave the kids alone. Okay, if they're in the window well of the basement, leave them there. Mom will come find them. So, yeah, absolutely. But Doug Roberts, Conquest Sense, you can find him and his wonderful line of products online, conquestsense.com. They are located in Davison, Michigan. Lots of great stuff, the hunting scents, the scent dispensers, scent bombs, scent fire, which is a fantastic item, the scrape maker, synthetics, and stuff for dog training as well. Doug, thank you and Karen very much for being a part of the show. We really, really appreciate it.
Oh, you're welcome. It's a joy to be with you and spend time with you, Duran.
All right, man. Thank you so much. Got David A. Rose coming up next, talking to the Morrell Majority. Playing words. See what I did there? It's Wild Michigan.
I still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild!
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here. Thanks to our good friend Doug Roberts at Conquest Sense for weighing in on something. It's really kind of funny because I didn't plan that. You know, I mean, here we are. We're in mid-May. Fawns are being born, and we're at the beginning of what's going to be like the perfect antler growth season. We had the really cold, wet spring. And then, of course, you get this hot weather. The humidity brings the blood pressure up on the deers, gets the blood coursing through those areas where the antlers grow, and they just take off. They just get huge. And, you know, we're probably going to have another great antler season this year, but we didn't. I got sidetracked by something else. And if you didn't catch it, by all means, pick it up on the podcast at wildmichiganradio.com or iTunes or the Google Play Store, wherever the heck you find your podcast, look for Wild Michigan and check out that interview because it's one you're going to want to hear. I really enjoyed it and never saw that one coming. Now, I also enjoy my conversations with David A. Rose, which usually happens for about 15 minutes before we even decide to do the show. And I have him joining me right now. David, how are you, sir?
Really good, actually. Got a little frog in my throat, but other than that, we're good to go.
Well, I won't come over with a gigging stick trying to get him out, but, you know.
Well, I appreciate it.
Oh, man, that's a movie waiting to happen. Normally we're talking about fishing right now, which I'm sure at some point during the course of these two segments we will get to that. But it's springtime, so a lot of turkey hunters around, and a lot of other hunters are in the woods as well, but they're not wearing camo unless they have that damn secret spot that they don't ever want to tell anybody about. I'm talking about morel hunters.
I wear camo.
I was going to say, damn it, I knew it. You're one of them, the morel majority.
That's right.
So, and yeah, I mean, look, there are people probably swearing at me in the radio right now. What's wrong with having a secret spot? Nothing's wrong with having a secret spot, but geez, don't act like you got the key to Fort Knox. Okay, is all I'm saying. And David, I'm going to ask you, I played devil's advocate with Doug Roberts about deer farming in the first segments. And I'm going to do the same thing with you, even though this is a little more truth than fiction, going, what is the attraction to the morel mushroom? Because I don't find them to be like the tastiest tidbit I've ever seen in my life, ever had. You know what I mean?
I do. And I think it's just their elusiveness. I think it's just that, you know, you got like a week, you know, and you never know what week exactly it's going to be. We know it's going to be sometime in the spring. And some springs are dismal, and some springs, like this one, seeming to, you get on the social media and people are posting pictures of, you know, look, we got 50 pounds and blah, blah, blah. And they're the ones in camo, too. But, yeah, I enjoy the I can notice a flavor difference in the morels. Compared to, let's say, your button mushrooms that you buy in the store and stuff. They've just got a little, a woodier flavor. You know, mm-hmm. You pick them out from the woods. So, but I think that allure is just their elusiveness.
Yeah, I can see that because they can be very difficult to find. But when you find one, you usually find a bunch of them popping up. But they have places, David, that they really prefer to grow. And I know... elm trees and old fruit trees, old orchards are good places for them to kind of sprout up and become plentiful.
Yep. But I found them anywhere from, you know, pine forest to out in the middle of the field. I actually have a spot up here in northwest lower Michigan where it's a major road and I can't be 20 feet off the side of the road. And they're in the drainage ditch. You know?
Wow.
And it's just one of those spots. In fact, I pulled over one time and one of the owners of the land there, I wasn't trespassing because I was down in the drainage ditch. And, you know, asked if everything was okay because he saw me pull over on this busy road. And I said, yeah, I'm good. I turn around and the state policeman pulls up behind me and goes, hey, everything okay? And I'm like, okay, he's giving up my spot here.
Nothing to see here. Move along. I'm only in camo with a great big bag in my hand. See, there's nothing to
see. Exactly.
Yep. Well, that's funny because, you know, And you know, to your point, yes, I found one time. The first one I ever found was behind the radio station in a rock pile underneath like a dying fruit tree that was there. Up until that time, the only one I had ever found, and it was in the strangest place ever, and I almost didn't want to believe it was real.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I have some friends that, you know, they go out and they look for morels and all that kind of stuff. And one of my buds, he got home And he thought somebody was playing a joke on him. These things were like a foot tall. And he took pictures of them. This is before cell phones and everything. Everyone had cameras. So he went in and got his real camera and took these pictures. They were the true Morel mushroom. And, I mean, these things were 12 inches tall. They were huge. And they just kind of came up overnight right in his front yard.
I'm glad you brought that up because Morels, to me, black Morels, white Morels, they've always been like 2-3 inches. From what I've seen the majority of. And then when a friend of mine brought one in that was one of those monster 12-inch morel mushrooms, I'm like, I don't think I'd be eating that because it's freakishly large. But they do. They get that big.
They do. They can get that big. You know, and people always talk about them popping. They have they've now got, you know, all this footage and stuff like this. The morel mushroom is actually kind of, from the ones they've seen, they just don't all of a sudden go pop. You know, they actually grow. So, you know, maybe you got a spot and you see these little one-inch morels. Maybe you go back the next day. You might have two-inch morels, have a little more meat on there. It's hard to say.
Now, is there a good way to harvest, speaking with David A. Rose here from Wild Fishing, is there a good way to harvest? Because we've been told by morel experts, air quotes, that cutting at the base of the stem, leaving a little bit behind is good. Truth to that?
You know, I tend to pinch them off, you know, instead of using a knife, I pinch them off with my thumbnail and leave that lower part in there. Because when I get home anyway, I'm going to cut all that dirt off there anyway. So, you know, I'm no expert at it, but from what I understand, yeah, leave them there. And then I also use, oh, they call them like wash bags or dish bags or something for camping there, that, you know, a bag that's all full of holes. Mm-hmm. And they say, you know, as you're picking them, put them in there. And as you're walking along, the spores will pop out and at least you're rejuvenating the area.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, and should they actually land and then, you know, regenerate the next year, you got a whole new trail, which would be beautiful.
Yep. That, and you know, they talk about it, like if you do rinse off your morels, save that water, go dump it out behind your barn or whatever in the same spot. And boy, I don't know if I've heard any, you know, any stories of them all of a sudden popping up a couple years later or something like that. But you know, from what I've read and from what I see and the experts, they, you know, they name all the places a morel could pop up, and it's pretty much anywhere.
David A. Rose is our guest here on Wild Michigan, speaking of morel mushroom hunting, because May is one of those months, man, where we get out and we start, you know, obviously turkey hunting, but morel mushroom hunting. And, David, you brought up those laundry bags, black, purple, always good, onion bags, orange bags, bad because they're red. And I say that because turkey hunters, we look for that color red out there when those toms are getting all charged up and they're looking, you know, their heads change color. And red is like their alerted, excited color, or their angry color, if you will. And so there may be some confusion. You may want to be careful in that respect.
Yeah, if you're walking through the thick of things and you got somebody that's excited, that's not a, you know, seasoned hunter. Yeah, it's always, you know, be on the safe side. That's just, you know, that's all I can say. And real quick, too, I got to tell you something that excites me just as much as morels are the leeks, the wild onions.
Ooh.
And I have lots of places. I mean, you see them growing up all over the place. So before they flower, right now, you can go out and dig them up. They're, you know, obviously smaller than the big leeks you might buy in the grocery store. But they're awesome. And I've got a recipe for pickling them. And of course we use them in salads and, you know, fry them up with our taters and all that kind of stuff. And they're wonderful. So that's another thing to look for, the wild leek.
You know, and that's something, you know, foraging has become, a very, very big thing. I mean, you know, a lot of people are really getting into it, and they're finding that fall, of course, is a great time for that. But the spring, the mushroom season in the spring is good. But I guess I never really thought about the wild leeks too much.
Yeah, no, they're awesome. And it's like I said, it's one of my favorite things. And while we have some friends in the Upper Peninsula, they actually dry them up and pulverize them and turn them into a spice. So it's a very, very oniony, leeky spice that you can put on your food.
Said leaky. David A. Rose from Wild Fishing is our guest here. We're being brought to you by Not Just Guns, Cedar Street at 127 in Mason. Look for their monthly auctions and all their great deals online and give them a call. Let them know Wild Michigan sent you. More with David next on Michigan Talk Network.
Hi, this is Cuz Strickland with Mossy Oak, and you're listening to Wild Michigan with Duran Martinez. It sits above the mantel on a couple rusty nails. And it's worth a bunch of money, but it damn sure ain't for sale. The good Lord only knows all the stories it could tell. Granddaddy's gone.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Very happy to have you here as we are talking to David A. Rose via the Conquest Sense hotline. And very happy to be speaking with David because he is such a wealth of information. He shares that in outdoor riding and classes and things of that nature, and has been doing so on this show for about the 15 years we've been doing it. David, I want to. We were talking about morels in the first segment. Also, leeks or ramps, or ramp as it's also called. There are a couple of ways that you can clean them, wash them out for bugs. Now, I hear also from those in the morel world who do this traveling on a very serious basis, don't soak them. And then you got the other people go soak them in salt water. I've been told by the morel people that it's, run them underwater, let them dry on a towel or a rack.
Let them dry out. I have a food dehydrator. And I'll cut them in half and lay them on there and let them dehydrate until they're just a crispy little critter. And then I'll stick them in a mason jar, vacuum seal that so no moisture gets in there. And then they last a long time that way. And that's when I do chili or something like that, put that in there with it. And they poof right back up almost to normal size. And you got morels in your chili.
Wow. That's, you know what? That, to me, it seems like a really kind of easy way, economical way, because those things, buddy, you think gold is on the rise? Try finding those things by the ounce or by the pound at your grocery store, at your specialty store. Man, oh man, they are not cheap.
They are going for $50 a pound on average this year.
I mean, I get it takes a lot to get a pound. But
it's when they're full of moisture, it's really not as much as you think. I mean, if they're dried, of course,
right?
But nobody's gonna. I mean, dried is gonna be double that because you're getting double the shroom.
Clarify, we're talking about morels here on the show. but no, I get it. I mean, look, it's like when I was in Canada bear hunting. You know, I would see that the wild blueberries were like $33 a liter or something like that, something ridiculous. You know, and until we had to pick our own wild blueberries, and I'm like, okay, now I get it, because they're so small and they're so labor intensive to pick. That by the time you get that leader, you got 2 hours worth of work into it.
Well, what you got to do is, being you're an antique picker, look for those blueberry pickers. It looks like a scoop with a comb on the end.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's how they used to do it.
Yeah, I know exactly what those things are, and good luck finding those, by the way. David A. Rose, our guest here, up in the northern part of Lower Michigan. Up in the Traverse City area, we'll just say that's a lot easier. How's the fishing up in your area? For people fishing on the big waters up there?
Well, the fishing's always good. The catching might not always be good,
right,
but the fishing is always good. So, it's been okay. Obviously, about a week and a half before I'm talking to you now, we had snow on the ground still, and we still had lakes that were trying to thaw out. Well, of course, now, we just set 2 days ago on Tuesday, we just set a record for heat, and that was 92 degrees. And so, yeah, we went from a very early spring to a midsummer real quick. So the bite is just kind of starting for a lot of fish. Of course, walleye seasoned up, opened up down here and stuff. And some of the folks in rivers and that are doing great, and are in the lakes. But, it's not hot and heavy. Steelhead runs are starting to slow up a little bit. You got some fresh fish trickling in every once in a while, but you got a lot of drop back fish that have already spawned. And we're struggling with our bluegill catch right now. Usually about now you can start going in, the bluegills are starting to move shallow. Yeah, that's been a tough one.
Man, that's you know, that's the eating fish. I mean, look, it's all eating fish, but that's the one that I think attracts so many people because it's the most cost effective, and your price per, you know, per piece really kind of goes down when you can catch 25 on a good day.
Yep. And you know what? It is amazing. You know, I've always said, you know, if you want to spend a lot of money on fish to eat, you know, go fishing, because obviously, you know, someone like me, I got a boat, I got this, I got that, all the tackle, yada, yada, yada. And, you know, fish was fairly reasonable in a fish market. You could even buy walleye or whatever. And I was in one of our local fish markets here, and I couldn't believe the price of walleye and perch and all that stuff. And I said, you know, it might actually be cheaper to go fishing now.
That'd be a first. Because
it would be a first ever. No, gas is, you know, if you got a rowboat, that's more, you know, a little more efficient on gas, you know. So,
but no, it's been crazy with gasoline prices and everything else, and I can't imagine what our charter captains are going through. I mean, look, people, when you look at a charter, you know, it's like, what is it, $300-$400 for a half day, you know, and even more for the full day. But when you consider price of gas, and these guys have to get the gas at a marina plus time and everything costs for their boat and their time and everything else, you're really kind of getting a good deal.
Oh, you're getting actually a great deal. I dabble in guiding and stuff like that, fully licensed and whatnot. Got some, you know, regular clients we like to get out. And they're regular because they saw the cost efficiency. Yeah, they could buy their own boat, but then they got the upkeep. They got this, they got that. And these are fairly good anglers, but they figured out two or three times a year they can go fishing with a guide or a charter captain and go, wow, I saved a lot of money this year.
Yeah, because look, the creel limits are the same, whether you're a guide or just a regular angler. So, I mean,
yep.
I guess, you know, to have the ability to go out on a boat you don't have to pay for year-round or insurance or the gasoline and everything else, you're paying for that fishing trip. It's definitely more cost-effective.
Yep. Years ago, quick story, gentleman called, him and his son wanted to go fishing. I told him how much I charged at the time, and he goes, to go fishing? And I said, yeah, blah, 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 and I kind of explained it a little bit. And he goes, well, he goes like, well, can I – give me the number of some boat rental places. I said, sure. Gave him a couple. He calls back about an hour later, and he goes, do you know how much they get for renting a boat? I said, yeah, more than me, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it was, and they are.
That's crazy. But you know, it's good to have you guys, because you know what, you eliminate so much work for us, for those of us who've never been out, you know, on the big water, you know, don't have a boat and everything else. It's so much more cost effective, and the trip is 10 times more enjoyable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They know what they're doing. Here's an example. Bunch of buddies and I went down to Detroit River 3 weeks ago or so. Of course, the night, you know, did really well in the walleye. We're all pretty decent anglers, but the key was, in each boat, we actually had some buds that were just taking a fun day of fishing that are actual guides on the river. And so, I mean, they taught it. Every time we go, they just teach us some new tip, some new technique for that specific body of water.
That's awesome. And, you know, this in this business, whether you know, are a casual angler or a professional angler, every day is a learning experience, because no 2 days are ever identical. Temperature-wise, water temperature-wise, clarity, wind conditions, previous day's temperature, fronts. I mean, you can take all of these factors, and you'll never have the same day twice.
No, they, you know, they always say, oh, you should have been here yesterday. Well, there's a lot of truth to that. Or you really should go tomorrow. But you don't know. There's been times I sat back and said, oh, man, we're going to – what a good day. This is like the perfect conditions. And it's dismal. And then there's times I go, why am I even taking these people out? You know, I feel like I'm going to take their money. And we annihilate them, you know.
Wow, that's,
you never know.
That's just crazy. I mean, it's so much fun. I've been on a few charters and always had a great time. And I have friends that do charters. You know, I mean, my good friend Hunter Engel, who is, you know, the son of Captain Dave Engel. You know, everybody knows who Captain Dave Engel is, and Hunter is no slouch. But where I think his real talents are personally, aside from angling, that guy can call in waterfowl like nobody's business. I mean, he's fantastic. So, I mean, he's like one of the cast and blast kings, if you will.
No, he really is. I see. I know their duck hunting skills. And then in the wintertime, they go down. I see their saltwater stuff they're doing. Mm-hmm. Just a good all-around hunter and angler. And I mean, he's got the right name, Hunter, you know?
He's a decent kid, too. You know, he's just, we pick
oh,
on him.
Great.
We pick on him looking like the Wendy's girl, but that's because we love him.
Well, yeah, and, but he does.
He does, but he does, and he'll admit it. But, no, yeah, I mean, they're down the, in the Bahamas, they have that place that they're starting to tout now, and it's like, man, I, you know what, I'm not a warm weather fishing guy, but maybe some cold winter, I will be very soon. Because yeah. I haven't done a lot of saltwater angling, and to me, that's it's always been quite interesting, because I never know what to touch, what I can touch when I pull it out of the water.
I totally understand. I absolutely love like fishing the surf and whatnot. And you remember last year I caught a, you know, a huge sturgeon in the Gulf of Mexico, even, you know, surf fishing, you know, can I touch it? You know, and I've had little old ladies out on the pier. I'm like, you know, I reel in some kind of a weird puffer or something like that. And I'm like, can I touch this? And they're like, no. I'm like, oh, okay. Will you take it off the hook for me? They know how to grab it and all that kind of stuff. So I got this, you know, 80-year-old woman taking the fish off for me.
Well, you know, I did one of those backwater trips in the salt water in the Gulf, and I pulled up a sail catfish to me.
Oh, yeah.
Guy says,
yeah,
don't touch it. I'm like, well, what do you mean? It's just a catfish. He's like, yeah. He goes, I got stuck in the finger. I felt it to the shoulder for a week. I'm like, oh.
Yep. Oh, yeah, those things are nasty, and I caught a lot of those the last time I was down there. But from what I understand, I heard they're good eating, so I'd just hate to clean one because I know I'd have to go to the hospital.
Right. Yeah, that's why I'm just, you know, I don't touch the stuff. I just let the guides do the work because that's what you're paying them for. But David A. Rose, great conversation as always, sir. We appreciate your time. We'll be looking for your work in the publications or see you teaching some poor kid how to fish, some poor radio guy how to fish. Thank you so much, David. Also, Doug Roberts, Conquest Sense, joining us in a great conversation this morning as well. By all means, pick it up online, wildmichiganradio.com. You can find the links to Conquest Sense, links to David A. Rose, links also to Not Just Guns, located in Mason, Michigan, 127 and Cedar Street, online, notjustguns.com. You can find us, wildmichiganradio.com. I'm Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network.